everywhere. And much like the Googles and Facebooks of the internet, the wallets are the software layer of cryptocurrency. So what you're going to start seeing, and already exists today, are wallets incorporating and partnering with exchanges to allow you to do crypto to crypto, fiat to crypto conversions all within the same app, allowing you to stay within a single brand for a lot of the crypto services that you'd normally need.
Well, we're at the Crypto Invest Summit with Paul Pouet of Edge Wallet, a thought leader, not even just only in the crypto wallet space, but in the crypto space as a whole. I know a lot of very influential people who hold Paul in very high regard. And so, and actually just as a little story, as I was coming here, I had our Uber driver who he was asking about crypto and Bitcoin, and someone had told him about it a while back. And so I was like, you know what, instead of just telling me about it, I'm just gonna, you know, I'll tip you in crypto instead. Had him get the Edge wallet because, and it's something I started using recently, so I'll be honest, I was using some other wallets, but I just thought that the ease of use for the person that's never set up crypto before, knows nothing about it, for, in my opinion, it was the easiest way to possibly do that. And yeah, so I went and sent him, I forgot, it was either Dash or Litecoin or Bitcoin Cash. It was probably Bitcoin Cash. Right. Now that it pumped up a little bit, I'm like, okay. I'm like, don't worry, if it goes down a little bit, this did go up a lot, so here you go.
So we're here at the Ritz-Carlton right now, just flew in from Phoenix and sitting here with an Uber driver who is going to remain anonymous right now, but we just hooked him up with an Edge wallet. So I don't know if we can just kind of show that we got hooked up with the Edge wallet. I'm going to give our driver here some Bitcoin Cash, showing him how it worked. But we've talked about all sorts of things today, didn't we? We talked about the Federal Reserve, talked about how it's all one big scam. And so now we're going to, for our driver's first time, send him a little bit. So what we want to do first is on the Edge wallet, we're going to request some funds. And so that's the address. And then what I'm going to do is go over to my wallet, hit send, and then so that way I've got the address up there. So what happened is it put in your address bar automatically, but you saw how quickly that happened. And then so I'm gonna say okay, let's, I guess part of this is actually putting in the password, not even okay. And then I just sent it, so if you back out of your app, you can see that, yeah, so you see actually you just got $5 of Bitcoin Cash, and see, look how long that took, like a second. And so this, so yep, so if you go, yep, so if you let's go over to let's go wallets. So right now we're still on the Edge wallet. You see, now it went up a penny, so now you made a penny somehow. So see that, we've got the Edge wallet, we've got $5. How long did that take? It's instantaneously. And that there was no banks involved, there's no merchant processors. It cost, I'd have to go check, see what it, I didn't look to see what,
so
it cost.
$5 cost.
0.0162 Bitcoin Cash. And the transaction fee was 0.0007 cents. So that's seven tenths thousandths of a penny is what it cost me to send that to you. And you actually ended up making a penny in the time that
I will.
And I want to thank you for coming on today. And can you tell us a little bit more about the Edge wallet and why you created it, or maybe how you got into the space to begin with?
So Edge, why did we create it? As an early, well, not super early, 2013 original user of Bitcoin, and having set up multiple different wallets from Mycelium, Blockchain.info, Armory, and whatnot, I easily found that the usability, specifically on the key management, specifically on how you back up and secure your keys, was as alienating and as intimidating as you could make it. It simply was not something I would recommend to anyone, not even technical people. Who it was for were for people, not necessarily technical or not technical, it was for people who were willing to jump through the hoops because they cared enough about crypto on an ideological level. And from the viewpoint of getting true adoption of crypto, I felt like we had to break past that. Get past just simply, okay, I'm ideologically aligned, so I'll jump through all the hoops. And so we created, at the time, called Airbits, was the original name of the company, the original Airbits wall, which was Bitcoin only, but it had the tech to be able to allow people to hold their own keys, be non-custodial, but still automatically encrypt and back up the private keys for Bitcoin without the user doing anything more than creating, you know, username and password. And that's it. And that's the core of what we do very differently from every other wallet in the ecosystem, is hide the complexity of key management behind simple account creation.
So even though you have your a simple way to get your account, like a, it's kind of like setting up an email, like a username, password type situation. I think you also can put in a four-digit PIN, or there's some other. Does it have the thumbprint on iPad? I can't remember. Okay,
because
I do. Every now and then it does. It makes you. It asks you if you remember your password to see if you want to verify, which is nice. But if someone did lose their password, it's sort of like losing your keys. Is that correct? If they lost their password, it's not like you guys can then send them an email like, okay, here's your password to get in. Is that, can you elaborate on that?
Sure. So losing a password, on the contrary, is not exactly like losing your keys. All right. So number one, a password can be two-factored for the from the protection point of you losing it to someone else. Like you write down your password somewhere and someone else picks it up. You would, if that was a private key, they've got your money. Since it's a password that's authenticating with a service, you can two-factor that. And an edge, it takes one tap of a button to enable two-factor. And suddenly, now that password, if someone else gets it, they doesn't allow them to access your money. Second of all, a password is generally human-generated. And so even if you might lose it, there's a chance for you to eventually remember it given enough tries. And we have had a number of people that have done exactly that. Yeah, I forgot my password. And we recommend one simple thing. Get out a notebook, and every time you try, write down what you've tried. And we had people take 3 months, but they got back in.
Wasn't there a hope? There was a story where a guy was like trying to undergo hypnosis and do all this different crazy thing. And I think, I'm not sure if he eventually got it. Maybe I'll link that in the show notes of what the end results of that. Do you happen to know what the results?
I've heard of some stories where they were successful and some that, weren't yet successful. But the thing is that there's at least that possibility and hope, right? It's not, if you lose 24 words, you are not ever going to recover that. Done. Gone. There is a second piece, which I now highly recommend anyone with Edge do set up, which is actually a password recovery capability, but you have to set it up ahead of time. And it's a split key mechanism highly motivated by multi-sig, which allows you to recover your account with two keys, one that Edge holds and another that you email yourself, so you hold in your email. So your email is kind of like your partially secure storage, but you don't fully rely on it. You also then authenticate to get the other key from Edge using two personal questions and answers, which we as Edge never see. We don't see the questions, we don't see the answers. They're all encrypted and hashed. But much like multi-sig, it's taking split keys and not trusting one entity, not your email, not Edge, but allowing you to have another mechanism to get access to your account. So if you set up password recovery 2FA with a normal username and password that you would normally create, your odds of easily being able to get into your account and recover it are very high. Nothing is perfect. Even like bank accounts and even your Gmail, there's a chance that you'll completely lose it if you absolutely forget everything. But our goal is not to be absolutely perfect. That doesn't exist. Trying to be perfect is probably one of the mistakes in cryptography. And so ours is to be much, much more forgiving and cross over the threshold of being very, very intimidating to very, very familiar and much more recoverable than what the ecosystem currently has. And we think we've gotten there.
Yeah, and one thing our mutual friend has called us, Ernest Hancock, is the grandma just button. So in terms of, and his wife is a grandma, technically, Donna, so shout out to Donna. And, so it's something where he can give it to her, she can figure it out in 20 seconds, I can give it to an Uber driver who they can figure it out, and it's just a great thing because in order to get, I remember, when everything was running up and I had clients who had never heard of Bitcoin or crypto, and all of a sudden, one of them is like, do you know anything about this Bitcoin? I'm like, how much time do you have?
Exactly.
And with them, you have to go through like, well, first you got to go on to Coinbase and you got to hook up your account and then you start getting into the private keys and getting a ledger or getting a Trezor and then you got to then send it into Shapeshift or go to another exchange, and basically their heads completely explode and they're like, well, can't you just do it for me? And so it's great seeing you guys take care of one of those vital pieces. The other vital piece, I guess, would be custody, and there's been lots of talk around here. So what are some of the things that you've seen maybe other presenters talk about that sort of excited you, or other sort of innovations that you see in the space that are, maybe they're not here right now, but maybe in the next, maybe if we talk next year, like what do you think some innovations that you see kind of coming down the pipeline?
Got it. So I want to address actually one of the things you said just a hair before that with respect to, okay, when you set up a new user, you got to tell them, like, set up this account, then the Shapeshift on their website, and then set up some exchange, like Kraken, blah, blah, blah. One of the things that I see coming, we're trying to lead on that, but we see the industry moving as a whole, is all of those services that you just mentioned are going to get absorbed and integrated in the wallet. One of the talks I've been giving is this concept that the wallet is the new exchange. Exchanges today have all the mindshare, They're what people think of when they think crypto. They're the household names, but they don't scale on a global level. People are like, what? Are you serious? Think of the analogy of the ISP. The ISP was the original internet startup. They were the ones that gave you connectivity, but they weren't global companies. They were very regional, and they were at the mercy of the legacy infrastructure systems, such as the telcos. That's what current exchanges are today, especially the fiat exchanges. They're at the mercy of existing banks and regulatory burden in each country that they operate in. Wallets aren't. We're pure software. We can operate anywhere in the world that doesn't outright ban or stop you from being able to download it. They operate everywhere. And much like the Googles and Facebooks of the internet, the wallets are the software layer of cryptocurrency. So what you're going to start seeing, and already exists today, are wallets incorporating and partnering with exchanges to allow you to do crypto to crypto, fiat to crypto conversions, all within the same app, allowing you to stay within a single brand for a lot of the crypto services that you'd normally need. And so in Edge right now, you can access four different crypto-to-crypto exchanges, Shapeshift, Changely, ChangeNow, Fast, best price hunting across all of them.
I sort of sent you guys a softball with that without even realizing it, because
And so, and you're going to see other companies do it. It's not unique to us, but we're definitely, that's our core focus. And then the fiat-to-crypto, we already have two partners with 6 to 7 in the roadmap over the course of the next 2 quarters. So that's one of the things that excites me, independent of what we do. Like, what excites me about us doing it, but it also excites me from the viewpoint of, it's going to transition the world away from focus on centralized custodial exchanges to more so non-custodial, more decentralized solutions for people to hold, buy, and sell crypto. Now, to further answer your question, what I'm excited about is taking the next step above that, as opposed to just acquiring and holding and sending and receiving money. What about replacing actual financial services that sit on top of money? Right? In our current world, we've got money, and we have financial services that are on top of money, such as loans, hedging, insurance. That's the part that I'm excited about next, and that's where I think dApps and smart contracts play a role. I don't think they're going to replace, they're not going to be the new internet. I'm not a big fan of the term Web3, in all honesty. The dApps have their place, and its most important value is taking financial services that have been restricted to highly fortunate, accessible individuals in developed countries, like insurance and loans, and making that now accessible globally to anyone that has a smartphone and an internet connection, and not needing to know how much money you have or any kind of KYC, are you in restricted countries? That to me is what I think, you know, projects like Augur and MakerDAO are really, really disrupting. And I'm excited to see more projects along those lines, like, you know, the decentralized finance movement. And we'd love to obviously integrate with those. And you'll see some of that integration come into your regular wallets like Edge as well.
That's amazing. And another thing that kind of really separates you guys out from a lot of the other wallets that are out there is the ability to have Monero able to do. Now, was that a decision that was tough for you guys? Because I know there's like some bad connotations sometimes with that, but there are reasons why you'd want Monero. And I do have a podcast that we put out like 2 weeks ago where we talked with Dr. Daniel Kim, who I'm not sure if you've ever, it's this guy who is a Harvard PhD, Yale MBA, or maybe the other way around, and he was giving all the legitimate use cases of Monero, and it was fascinating. I'll send you the interview. Yeah. And but I wanted to see what led you guys to like having Monero getting natively, you know, active with inside your guys' wallet.
Got it. So one of the things I love about Monero is it takes a currency with core focus on privacy, and it hides all of the complexity of being a private currency. So take some of the other competitors to Monero, and I want no knock on these guys because they're working on doing exactly this, like Zcash, or even the privacy protocols that can be attached to Bitcoin, such as stealth addresses or tumblers and mixers. While all of those are great privacy-based technologies, they all increase the friction for the user to use them.
Like it's not a gram adjust button.
It's not a gram adjust button. With Monero, it kind of is a gram adjust button. When I want to send you Monero, you have an address, I scan it, I send you Monero. You receive it. It feels just like sending and receiving Bitcoin, except that it's way, way more private. They've made the privacy features on by default. And that's something that we've advocated since we originally launched our original app, Airbits, is that, hey, guess what? You're using the app, you're sending and receiving, you're tagging transactions with people's name and, you know, how much money that was received and category and notes. Without you even caring, all that information is private. Nobody sees that I've tagged a payment to Ernie because he bought me dinner and I'm paying him back. it's all there, and it looks like. And Ernie even said this, he goes, oh, I get what you're doing here, Paul. You're collecting all that information, just like another Google. I go, Ernie, it's all encrypted. We can't see it, and it's open source code, so we can prove it. He's like, really? And so that privacy by default has always been kind of in our heart and minds. Make it where privacy is not relegated to just the people that care about privacy. Make it where people that even don't care about privacy get it. They don't even have a choice. And my theory is that that makes it more private for everybody. So say you and I and Ernie, definitely we care about privacy, but 99 other people in this room don't. But we give them tools that give them privacy that makes us more private. And so we believe in that and what we're building. And Monero was one of the few currencies that implemented that right out of the gate. And so hence it's like, it was a no-brainer that we wanted to do it. Now came the challenges of the technical hurdles and whatnot. I'm proud to say that we're one of the few teams that has the technical actual capability of doing it, because there's many other wallets out there that are just like, this is a pain in the ass. And no question about it, it is a pain in the ass on the developer side, so that it's not for the user.
Oh, thank you for that. And for so some of these other platforms that are out there, and just maybe kind of wrap it up, or you'd mentioned, this is not a knock to these other ones, but you've got, let's say, Dash that's out there, or Zcash. And again, not a knock to these, but do you know like what percentage of, let's say, the Dash transactions are, you know, private? You know, because right now, I mean,
I can't imagine it's more than 1%, but, you know, the Dash guys, I love the currency, I use Dash. Please correct me if I'm wrong, because I'd love to hear it be higher than 1%, but I don't imagine it being much higher than that, because of, as soon as it's not on by default, there's just so much more that a user would have to go to like turn it on and enable it. I know that one of the great things about Dash is they're making a lot of their functionality much more on by default. So Dash just recently turned on instant send. So now any wallet that sends Dash will by default try to do an instant send. It'll automatically try to do it, and that is awesome. And I give them super thumbs up for doing that. If they can start implementing that for private send, which I think is much harder, I don't know that they're going to be able to make that on by default. But pushing those boundaries, I think, is what is going to drive better privacy. I know the Zcash team is pushing to make privacy on by default, making it where, in the future, normal transactions just simply don't work. You know, they've mentioned that to me as being on their roadmap, and so that's where I'm going to have like a higher level of respect for that project, at least in terms of privacy by default.
All right, well, we definitely appreciate your time today. You're a true innovator in the space. One thing I also want to mention is you guys are putting out weekly Facebook Lives that I've seen. And I had a question for your team, and they actually got back to me during the Facebook Live. And it was actually about, you know, Shapeshift and Monero and how to do things and how to. And anyways, if you guys have questions, you guys can check. What's the best way for people to get a hold of you, either on Twitter or if they want to, you know, maybe not get a hold, but if they want to follow what you're working or your team, what's the best avenues for them?
So definitely the first place to start is on our website, edge.app. So it's pretty easy to get to. And from there, you can find our Telegram page. We have a very active Telegram forum, a few thousand users actively chatting and asking questions. You know, our support team helps out on Telegram as well. From there, you can get to our Twitter account, which is at edgewallet. You can connect to us on email, info@edge.app, and then on our Facebook page. So the links to kind of everything else pretty much starts on our website. There's also a link to what I'd love to be able to announce is we just launched the beta of being able to sell crypto into a credit card. And that you can sign up for the beta off our website and also join our equity crowdfunding campaign through Bank of the Future on there as well.
All right, well, thank you very much for your time today. And thank you for all the innovation and everything you've done to make it Graham and Jess button. Thank you very much.
A good friend of mine, Tim Pachote, he's a financial advisor at Scottsdale. He's going to be speaking at the TDV event. You'd be able to bring the crypto into the system. How would you be able to do a foundation, a trust, a this, a that, and so on? And, Tim was at the party. And I go, Tim, what up? He's been spending months that he's getting ready to present to you guys Monday on how you can take your crypto and not pay capital gains on it, not have taxes on it. I'm going, man, you need to talk to Tim.